Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Welcome to Saturday Frights, the podcast. I am your co-host, the Projectionist. And now, for your host, Vic Sage.
Hi, friends, and welcome back to the Saturday Frights podcast. Since we've somehow made it to our 50th episode, we've been celebrating it by giving each segment of George A. Romero and Stephen King's 1982 classic Creepshow its time in the spotlight. With the first two Creepshow segments, we have discussed the merits of Father's Day and the lonesome death of Jordy Verrill.
Which is still the weaker segment of the two. Isn't that right, dear listeners?
Well, tonight we have a tale that I think you appreciated a little more than the last Projectionist. It's entitled, Something to Tide You Over. And this story scared me even more than Father's Day.
I felt the segment of the anthology was more in line with the EC comics of old. It followed that funny book's typical story where an unscrupulous character received his comeuppance by supernatural elements.
I'll definitely agree with that statement. Like Father's Day, Something to Tide You Over was written by Stephen King for Creepshow. It isn't an adaptation of any of his previous literary work, although in a very minor way it is similar to his short story, The Ledge, which was published in 1976 before being collected in 1978's Night Shift. The Ledge was adapted into another anthology film 3 years after Creepshow. That was 1985's Cat's Eye. As Something to Tide You Over transitions from comic book image to live action, we are introduced to two of our main protagonists right off the bat. Harry Wentworth, played by Cheers' Ted Danson, is woken up from his nap on the couch by someone not just banging on the door, but calling him by his name. This happens to be one Richard Vickers, who is played by the legendary Leslie Nielsen. Now for myself, the first time I ever saw Leslie Nielsen was in the 1980 comedy Airplane, and his role in Creepshow was an eye-opener to be sure, because there is nothing humorous about what his character is up to.
That surprises me, Sage. You hadn't seen Leslie Nielsen's performance in 1956's science fiction masterpiece, Forbidden Planet?
No, not by 1982.
Considering the household you grew up in, Victor, I find that shocking.
I wouldn't be able to see Forbidden Planet for a couple of years, and that was thanks to the TBS Sunday afternoon movie. I've met Leslie Nielsen, by the way.
Oh, really?
I'll talk about that after the synopsis. It ties into a humorous fact about the making of this segment. Anyway, when Harry opens up the door, we can tell he knows who Richard is. Both men give each other cold stares. The older man cuts through all of Harry's bluff, however, even after the younger man gives him a not-so-thinly-veiled threat of bodily harm.
Are you aware of the old saying? A truly strong person does not need the approval of others any more than a lion needs the approval of sheep.
I have not heard that before, but are you saying that you think Richard is a strong person?
Most certainly. His willpower and intellect make Harry Wentworth cower.
Projectionist, Richard isn't stronger, but more devious. He craftily lets slip that if Harry doesn't let him in, that something will occur to who we will later learn is the older man's wife, Becky, played by Dawn of the Dead's Galen Ross.
To be clear, he states something very nasty will happen to Becky. Something so nasty that Harry Wentworth's mind would barely be able to conceive of it. Some would say, Victor, that being devious is also a strength, huh?
Yeah. This is the part where we, of course, learn that Harry and Richard's wife are having an affair. I'm not condoning their actions, but Romero and King make it pretty clear that Richard isn't particularly a loving man. Harry seems almost relieved that Richard has found out, and admits that he and Becky were going to sit down and tell him, even mentioning that the young woman doesn't even want to press a claim for alimony or even a piece of Richard's estates, She simply wants their marriage to end, as she and Harry have found true love.
It's never actually explained, dear listeners, but it would seem that Richard is quite wealthy.
I think it's pretty evident he's well off, possibly even through the electronic business. TV, VCRs, portable tape recorders, camcorders, etc. He certainly seems to have a knack with them. Richard's response will tell you just how much of a weasel he really is, not to mention how great Leslie Nielsen could be at playing the heavy.
Well, I don't know whether I ever loved her or not, Harry. That doesn't matter. The point is, I keep what is mine. No exception to that rule ever. No exceptions, Harry. Ever.
What did you mean when you said something nasty was going to happen?
Well, you really should take better care of this equipment. At least get a maintenance cartridge and dust off the heads.
Talk to me right now.
Take your hand off me right now. Got something I want you to hear.
Harry, he's got me. Please come. Please. He's got me. If you don't come, then please, Harry, please come.
I had to stop it there. I couldn't bear to record anymore.
What have you done with her?
You kill me and you'll never find out. Now, don't get naughty, Harry. If I fall down on this floor and hit my head on that hard marble, well, I could fracture my skull.
That would be fine with me.
Yeah, and then you'll never know. And believe me, Mr. Truelove, you want to know. Because by 11 this morning, it's going to be too late.
Richard Vickers' rather cryptic comment about when it is 11 o'clock in the morning. It will already be too late. The shoes that our hero of the day, Harry Wentworth, joins the jealous husband on a little day trip.
Richard drives Harry out to the beach. Now, don't think that Harry's playing nice with Richard, even though the older man is doing his best to be forcibly jolly at the situation. Almost like maybe he's hoping to get the younger man to drop his guard. During their trip, Harry does mention that the way Richard is acting, well, it doesn't seem like he's quite sane. To which the older man admits that in some things, he isn't sane, like on the subject of what is his. Richard parks his Jeep on a stretch of the beach and eggs Harry on to join him on the top of a dune, where he smiles like the cat that ate the canary when he points further down the beach.
Yes. As Harry Wentworth looks at where Richard Vickers is pointing, he sees a mound of sand and a shovel. Could this be the work of burying, say, a poor young woman?
Harry takes off like a flash, his worst fears, of course, being that Richard did, in fact, bury Becky on the beach. We, the viewers, however, see that Richard bends over to pull up his pant leg to remove a gun from an ankle holster. As Harry reaches the mound of sand, he sees that on the other side is a fairly deep hole. Taking the shovel with thoughts of probably using it on Richard's head, he turns around to see the older man pointing a gun at him. Harry tries to talk reasonably with Richard, who tells him he wants the young man to jump into the hole, where he then instructs him to kneel and pull the sand in around him.
To immobilize the young man. He won't be able to get any leverage to free himself from the horror he is about to face.
Absolutely, projectionist. Richard does promise Harry that if he does this, he will get to see Becky. With a gun pointed at him, he slowly begins to scoop the sand into the hole. Richard helps, of course, get the last bit, so that the only part of the young man that is sticking out of the sand is his head. You might be thinking, this is a beach. There is a possibility that someone might come along and interrupt the two. But sadly, as we find out from Richard, this is a private beach. The older man owns all of it.
After one of Creepshow's famous funny book transitions, we realize a little time has passed, and Richard Vicker returns to Harry Wentworth, the back of his Jeep trailing a large amount of cable.
We find out what for as Richard removes a video camera, VCR, and a TV. He plants the camera and TV in front of Harry, Turning on the TV, it is revealed that Becky is in the same dire predicament as her love. Except, for the tide is already rolling in where she has been buried in the sand, and she is having to fight for breath. We can see her hopes are dwindling fast, and it's a very tough thing to watch. Galen Ross doesn't have much screen time in this segment, but she sells it quite well. Richard, like some kind of demented game show host, is having the time of his life and can't resist an offering commentary on what they are watching, as well as giving survival advice to Harry.
Oh my God. You are insane.
But I promised that you'd see Becky again. I kept my promise. Is that insane? There's a chance you can get out of this, Harry. The tide might even set you free. It depends on how long you keep it cool, how long you hold your breath, you see, Harry. Water's so cold, so salty. You're underneath, and you're holding your breath, and you're waiting for that wave that's covering you to go on back out so you can snatch a quick breath before the next wave comes in. You've got a chance, Harry. See if you don't lose your head. Now, it looks like she's losing hers, doesn't
it? Oh, God, no!
Feel how hard your heart is beating, Harry? How fast? Now that's going to make it harder for you to hold your breath, isn't it?
As the tide begins to roll in, Richard bids his farewell, retreating to his home just a bit up the beach. We, the viewers, are left to watch as Harry is forced to see his love slowly lose the fight against the water, just in time to realize his turn is next. Meanwhile, Richard jauntily makes himself a drink as he turns on the live feed of the drowning of Becky and Harry. He is genuinely amused at Harry's fight, but the smile slides off his face as he watches Becky lose the struggle.
Yes, I was wondering. Perhaps this is proof Richard Vickers did have feelings for his wife after all.
I don't think so, projectionist. He's probably more upset that he's lost a possession. As Richard is watching, Harry looks up at the camera, defiantly vowing he will get the older man for what he has done. He'd say more, but he is forced to gasp for air before the tide crashes in, and it doesn't abate.
Well then, witness to Harry Wentworth's last moments. Time is up for the young man, as the last of his air escapes his lips. Although, this is not the last we've seen of Becky Vickers and Harry Wentworth. Isn't that right, Sage?
Way to jump ahead there a bit, my friend. The next morning, Richard drives out to reclaim his equipment. He has to do a little digging to retrieve the television, but the camera is missing. The cable it was attached to is shredded. The man theorizes the tide took it, and must have pulled Becky and Harry's corpses out as well.
Richard Vickers, though, suddenly looks suspicious of his theory, Victor.
Oh yeah, I definitely think he was ready to deal with their corpses, and this kind of rattled him a little. That evening back at his house, Richard is comfortably watching an old movie. By the way, the marble ashtray from Father's Day makes its appearance by his bedside. Thanks to a comic book transition, we the viewers can see the beach, and two sets of footprints that begin at the water, as if the pair had just come out of the surf. Richard is about to call it a night, when he hears something strange. It almost sounds like Harry calling his name, if Harry were trying to talk and gargle water at the same time. Checking his advanced security camera setup around his property, he can see that no one is messing about, and decides to take a quick shower before turning in.
The problem, dear listeners, is that there are two people at his door. Well, they used to be people. On the camera, they only show up as a type of fog. But we can see that they are two shambling figures, rotting, covered in seaweed, and dripping wet.
Friends, you know of course that Harry and Becky have returned from the dead to get their revenge on Richard. The older man attempts to gun them down, but they remind him in horrible, wet voices that he already killed them, and they just want to take him down to the beach. They've dug a hole for him. Richard attempts to barricade himself in the next room, but as he turns around, his grip on sanity is shattered as Harry and Becky are standing there. The two are smiling triumphantly, their bodies grotesquely pruned from their time in the sea, and they begin repeating the older man's advice to them, over and over and over.
I can hold my breath for a long time.
And when we last see Richard, he has been buried up to his neck in the sand as the tide begins to roll in, with two sets of footprints leading into the surf. With the revenge complete, perhaps Harry and Becky can rest in the afterlife. That is the full synopsis for Something to Tide You Over, friends.
Victor, I found that last scene with Harry Wentworth and Becky Vicker very reminiscent of Todd Browning's 1932 film Freaks. When the circus folk begin to chant, "One of us."
Yeah, I can see that.
You mentioned earlier in the broadcast that you were scared by this segment. Was it the being buried alive situation?
Not at all. Although that ranks pretty high on things I don't want to experience. No, as I've said on the Retroist as well as the podcast, I'm a huge fan of Romero's zombie films. Love them. Ever since I saw Night of the Living Dead that one Halloween night. I know this will sound silly, but there are rules to that universe. If you were thrust into a Romero zombie apocalypse, if you were smart and careful, you could survive. It's the people you have to watch out for in his zombie universe. With the zombies in Creepshow, you don't have a chance. In Father's Day, the resurrected Nathan Grantham had supernatural powers and was obviously intelligent. But with the return of Harry and Becky, you had to face something you truly couldn't stop or get away from. I mean, if Richard had bolted from his home and drove away, I'm positive that when he looked up in his rearview mirror, they would be there.
And people whisper, I spend too much time in the Retroist vault. Do you sit around and plan out your zombie apocalypse strategy, Victor?
I plead the fifth.
Do you think that possibly the sea zombies never occurred? That Richard lost grip on his sanity due to guilt?
I think that's a good theory, Projectionist, and it would certainly lend itself to some of the old EC comic tales. But Richard wouldn't have been able to bury himself like he did at the end. Plus, Romero makes a point of showing the footprints in the sand. Obviously, Leslie Nielsen was a joy to work with, but you might say he caused problems on the set. It's been reported that Nielsen had a portable fart machine that he carried with him. So just before Romero would call action, he would let it go off, which would cause Ted Danson and the crew to break out in laughter. Now, I've seen this in action myself, so I have no doubt it's true. I guess this would have been about 15 years ago, but I was working at the hotel where Mr. Nielsen happened to be staying. During dinner, he walked through the dining room. Please bear in mind, this happened to be a very busy night. The place was at capacity, which was about 350 guests. You had to almost shout to be heard, but when Mr. Nielsen walked by, every couple of steps, he would engage the machine. Then, he would stop like he wasn't sure he heard the noise and started sniffing the air. You could hear a pin drop when he went by.
Oh my! And how did his fellow diners take this?
I would say that 99% recognized him and began to bust out laughing shortly after he walked away. But I definitely saw a few people that were extremely offended. Friends, just before we began recording tonight, I saw that Ted Danson was interviewed on the AV Club about his career. He happened to mention Leslie and his machine. Apparently, while it was bad on set, it was far worse off the set. Danson explained that he and Nielsen were banned from many of the local restaurants, as the older man would continuously use the machine and it offended the local patrons. Another fun fact is that in the original screenplay by Stephen King, this was intended to be the fourth story, with a segment we'll be discussing tomorrow, The Crate being the third. Now, before I jump into the notable cast and crew, do you have any drive-in goodies for our listeners?
Indeed.
I have the power to abandon this body and enter yours.
This is my fiancée, Miss Evelyn Lang, and Miss...
And Mr. Kingsford. Why are you not dead?
Did he have a knife?
No knife did that. He had claws.
No.
Don't touch it! Put us down!
That thing felt like it was alive.
Robert! Wake up!
There are answers I must have before I go out of my mind.
Everything will be answered before the day of your wedding.
6 killings that we know of, and 7 spokes in the Cimmerian wheel.
So tomorrow, the 7th killing?
Before midnight.
Alakai!
The answers. All of them. At last.
In the past few podcasts, we've talked about George A. Romero's work as well as Stephen King's acting appearances. Ted Danson has 86 acting credits with notable roles in TV and film, such as 1979's The Onion Field. He made an appearance in BJ and the Bear. He was in 1981's Body Heat, 1987's Three Men and a Baby, and its 1990 sequel, Three Men and a Little Lady. But he is probably best known for his role as Sam Malone in 270 episodes of the hit TV series Cheers. Recently, he can be seen absolutely knocking it out of the ballpark on the second season of Fargo. We talked about Galen Ross's career on the Madman podcast, as she only has 3 acting credits, but has found a career as a documentary director. Leslie Nielsen passed away on November 28, 2010, but had garnered, get ready for this, 245 acting credits. Notable roles besides Airplane and Forbidden Planet include 1957's Tammy and the Bachelor, 36 episodes of the police procedural drama The New Breed from 1961, 1965's Dark Intruder, which the projectionist kindly shared. It was a failed TV pilot that was made into a movie that had Nielsen playing an occult investigator. It was kind of like a prototype of what Kolchak the Night Stalker would become. It's really a shame that the series wasn't picked up. Nielsen could be seen in 1966, The Plainsman, and he appeared in Walt Disney's Wonderful World of Color from 1959 until 1967 in the Swamp Fox TV movies as Colonel Francis Marion. He was also in 1977's awesome Day of the Animals, where, I kid you not, he gets into a bare-chested fight with a bear with nothing but a knife to defend himself. He was in 1980's Prom Night, but Nielsen is probably best known for his role as clueless police officer Frank Drebin from the Police Squad TV series and popular Naked Gun films. I think that about wraps up the episode. On behalf of the projectionist and myself, we thank you for listening to the Saturday Frights podcast. If you did enjoy the show, we hope you will hop on over to the Retroist every Saturday, where we present everything from classic horror TV shows to the best in frightening shorts. The music you hear at the beginning of the show was provided by Peachy. If you'd like to contact him, you may do so at peachy@retroest.com. Our ending theme is entitled Twisted Toys and was composed by Tony Longworth. You can listen to even more of his music on SoundCloud and on his official site, which you can reach at www.tonylongworth.com. Of course, I have to give thanks for the invaluable feedback to my co-host, The Projectionist. Where can your fans find you if they wish to contact you?
I am sometime on the Facebooks. Projectionist. Haunted Drive-In.
Saturday Frights has a Facebook page as well, and we would appreciate it if you could stop on by, give us a like, or even let others know about it. It's another spot where we can share our love of retro horror with you, and not have to wait until Saturday to do so. The podcast is available on iTunes and Stitcher, and I can be found nearly every day on the Retroist. If you have any suggestions for future shows or feedback, you can contact me at vicsage@retroist.com. Saturday Frights owes a great debt of gratitude to the Retroist himself for not only allowing us to record here in the Retroist Vault, rent-free, but hosting the podcast as well. When you have your retro needs, and we all do, just head over to www.retroist.com. Until next time, the vault is sealed.
Captain, how soon can you land?
I can't tell.
You can tell me, I'm a doctor.
No, I mean, I'm just not sure.
Or can't you take a guess?
Well, not for another 2 hours.
You can't take a guess for another 2 hours?
No, I mean, we can't land for another 2 hours. Fog has closed down everything this side of the mountains. We've got to get through to Chicago.
This has been a Retro West production. Goodbye.